Good morning. Welcome. We have a special treat this Sunday morning. We have a visiting teacher here, Venerable Amy Miller. She's a Western teacher, as you can tell from her name. She's been a nun for about 30 years, and she has visited before. She's very skillful at kind of making the Dharma practical in our daily lives, much like Geshe-la does on Sunday mornings as a general rule. So she'll be here shortly. Just a reminder that when we have visiting teachers, well, actually with anything that we do with the Dharma, we don't ask people to spend money to get into the door. We think the teachings are very, very precious. But we do have expenses involved in having visiting teachers. So if what you hear this morning moves your hearts at all, we would welcome any donations that help us pay for the expenses, and then also enables us to give her a very generous offering on behalf of all of us here at Kadampa Center. And she will also be teaching this afternoon, finishing her weekend workshop on developing a fully open and kind and loving heart. Also at lunchtime today, we have Losar coming up in a couple of weeks. Losar is Tibetan New Year, and we have a little celebration with music and dance and goodies to eat. And some of us are trying to learn a couple of Tibetan dances to do as part of that. So if you want to stay, we're going to do a little bit of that during, work on that during the lunch hour. There will also be practice next Sunday after the teachings and on Wednesday evenings at 5:30. And Geshe Sangpo, he won't be here at lunchtime today, but he will be coming next Wednesday at 5:30 to help teach it. So you can learn it from a real master. I think that's everything that I have for right now. So Venerable Amy should be here very soon. If you're not familiar with the practice, when the teacher enters the room, we do stand in respect for the teacher and the teachings that she represents. And then Venerable Amy has been following Geshe-la's habit and inviting us to prostrate with her. And if you're not familiar with prostrations and it's not comfortable to you, you don't need to join in. That's a perfectly voluntary process. And I think that's all I have. Thank you. I knew I was forgetting something important. When we finish our prayers, just before the children leave, Venerable Amy always likes to take a group shot with the groups when she comes and teaches. So we're all going to gather at the front of the room and cluster around her and have a group portrait taken. So we'll be doing that right after we finish the prayers and before the children disperse to their classes. And if somebody would like to help me, I think I want to move these, move the nuns' tables a little bit out of the way so that we have lots of room for everybody to gather. Okay, so we'll start at the top of page 34 in the gold prayer book with the Shakyamuni Buddha mantra, which we'll say three times. Taya ta mune mune maha munaye soha. Taya ta mune mune maha munaye soha. Taya ta mune mune maha munaye soha. Then about halfway down the page, we do the four immeasurables. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. And then we'll turn the page to page 37. And if you're using the white notebooks, we'll be doing the four immeasurables chanted in Tibetan, and that's the words that are nearest the music. Sem chan tam che de 7 times.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you so much for coming. My name is Amy, and that was really exciting, wasn't it? The photo. I'm kind of done for the day now. That's done it for me. Thanks so much. Nice to see some of you again. And I hope it's okay. I know we just have a little over an hour, I believe. I hope it's okay if, I know you have different themes on Sunday mornings, different ideas and things, and I've kind of checked in that Geshe-la often asks you some questions, and so I don't know, I just had this theme today. I hope it's okay if we talk about forgiveness. Does that work for people? What I tend to do is, it depends what book I'm reading at the current time of themes that come up or a few books I've read that have moved me. So I sometimes feel it's helpful to share that with others as far as my own path and things that, you know, have been helpful. Just have to remember where I am in one course so that, and it relates to the course I'm doing this weekend anyway with compassion. So just bear with me a moment. I'm teaching more and more on the computer because I travel and it's much easier moving around without a lot of books like that. Let me just find this area here. Okay. So what I'd like to do is just take a moment, if you can close your eyes for a moment. And just allow your gaze to go inward for a moment. Letting go of the excitement of the morning, all the activities of the morning. And allow a normal, natural breath to move through your system. Bringing your mind a little bit more to focus there. And you may have already done this morning, considering your purpose, how to make the day most meaningful. So bring yourself back to that idea, or bring yourself ahead or present to that idea. What lends meaning to your life right now? And as there are many things we could be doing right now other than being here, it's great you have shown up here. We can make this time useful. As I will share some information, and if it is useful for you, great. You do yourself need to investigate what I'm saying and apply it to your life. If it's not useful, put it to the side. Find something else that can be helpful. But through our lives, we get a lot of information. Some of it's enormously valuable and can help us move along a path to full awakening, to fully waking up. So becoming like a Buddha, which means Buddha in Sanskrit, fully awakened being. What's it like to be fully awakened, you might think? You are free of all fears, clairvoyant, unlimited in how you can help all living beings, whether they harm you, whether they help you. Vast, open, spacious experience of your mind and heart, manifested with infinite compassion, wisdom, loving kindness. Every moment you breathe. Just imagine that space for a moment. Can we somehow move ourselves to that place as quickly as we can, because so many others are suffering? And from that place, we're really able to best help all of them. So really, for the purpose of helping others, we will get together right now. So just take a moment, think about your set a good intention. If you'd like to include that sort of intention, feel free. And please relax. You can open your eyes. So, our intention, with your intention, you are directing your awareness. This is a power you have. You are directing your awareness, rather than having your day mow over you, so to speak. You wake up in the morning, right? How many of you have lists rolling through your morning in the bed with you, right? Right? So you're waking up in a comfortable, safe environment. Good temperature in the room, food in the refrigerator, decent clothes to wear, loving family and friends for the most part, right? So what do you need your lists in bed with you for? You got all day for your lists. So I start my practice in bed, thinking about the succulence of the wonderful life I have, the wonderful qualities I have, in a balanced way. I'm not an egomaniac saying I'm so great. I'm just, I have some value. You all have value. You're all good enough. Right? So I start from there, gratitude, and then I realize that I could pass away quickly. It's happening. We're all going to die one day. So instead of getting morbid in the thought, I let it motivate my practice and direct my energy. So I want to make the most meaning of today. And everyone has a different thing that will mean to them. But set your intention right there. You know, the lists are going to come and distract you. Thanks very much. I got all day to deal with you guys. Okay, I'm not doing that now. All day, because I'd like to get my mind balanced from the start so I can better deal with my activities and my lists. This is practical. This is your practical wisdom, just to get yourself going in a better space. Some days you will wake up and feel that, you know, the days you wake up, you're not in a good mood, you notice early on. No problem. Again, you can adjust the attitude by making sure you have a good intention going. It's your choice. You can let the bad mood take you over. A lot of people do. It's happening. It's rolling out. It's ruminating. And now it's huge. Right? Or bad mood. I'm just observing the bad mood. Just observing. It's just another little situation in my mind. A little cloud came in. And this one's a little bigger, more obscuring than the light little idea I just had. That's all. Let it go. Let it go. Don't have to get any more involved in it than you want to make it. Just practical experience. Please, you try. Some of you are already doing, right? Okay. So I want to talk a little bit in our time, and there will be time if you have any questions as well. Some of the books I've been reading recently is the fundamental situation of our human condition. I'm sorry to break it to you. Is that we are all broken. We are all broken. Okay. I'm not laying a trip on you. I'm not saying I'm less than I am, but by acknowledging my brokenness, I'm much better able to help somebody else who's broken, to reach across, accept that they're also broken. And that's where forgiveness begins. Okay. So the only way to change your brokenness, you know, we want to fix stuff. We're a society of fixers, Americans. Got to sort it. Has to be sorted. Okay? So if you want to sort your brokenness, the only way to do it is to go through it, meaning facing the pain and the suffering. That's not something Americans are that comfortable with. What I would recommend, you'll be a lot happier if you get comfortable with it. And that's a lot of my spiritual practice, getting comfortable with the uncomfortable. You know, so once you're beginning to face some of your fear, your anxiety, analyzing it, in Tibetan Buddhism we analyze, we investigate. So please investigate thoroughly everything I'm saying. Don't just accept it because I'm in maroon robes and I have a bald head and, you know, please. Really, you need to check up. You need to check up. So this is around the anniversary of when Lama Yeshe passed away, one of the founders of our tradition, of our organization, and he was very much always like, check up, dear. You know, you need to look, how does this apply to my life? Is that really true for me? If you don't want to look at your pain and your suffering, when you're dying, it's going to be there in your face. Generally, it will be there in your face. I've done a lot of hospice work to see the regrets people have, the business and the work they didn't do when they were alive is going to be there. Unfinished. Okay. So we have control over our minds now. You might say, well, not really. Okay, that's what we're working on, because that's the only thing you can control is your mind. Not your mother, not your neighbor, certainly not your spouse. Okay? It's your mind. And when you get better control over your mind, your external reality will change for the better. And you are become a living example of somebody who can better control their mind. It's exciting. And you're much freer and you're much happier. Okay? So recognizing our own brokenness, I'm reading a book right now by Archbishop Desmond Tutu, The Book of Forgiving. Has anybody read this book? Book of Forgiving? It's well worth, he wrote it with his daughter. There's some practical exercises. But there's another book I read in the past year called Just Mercy. Has anyone read this book? By Brian Stevenson. Okay? Please read this book, Just Mercy. I was very moved. He's a lawyer who represents poor people that have been falsely convicted that are on death row. Death row or life in prison sentences. And many of them have been overturned because these people didn't have representation because they didn't have money. Some of them were children. And he presented in front of the Supreme Court some years ago. So now it's unconstitutional for a minor to be sent to prison for life without parole. And that's unconstitutional now because of him. So both of them, Archbishop Desmond Tutu, Brian Stevenson, many other, my other teachers, but these are just two contemporary books I'm bringing up. They both talk about we are broken. Like if we don't recognize our brokenness. And so that's a painful place to go to. But Brian Stevenson at one time was representing a guy and all the appeals had run out, this death penalty person. And somehow he had a last conversation with the guy on the phone and then realized there was nothing more he could do. And he was so frustrated and so done with the whole system and the whole thing of like, these people didn't get represented and these people have money to do this. And he was just done and the whole program he started, the Equal Justice Initiative, was limping along, always trying to get funding and never, always short of attorneys. And he was just done. You know, you've all had these moments where you're like, I'm out of here. I'm done with this. Forget it. So he realized he was going to quit and he was done. He wanted to close the project and somehow had this, and he broke down crying and realized this whole thing that we're all broken. Like somehow in that space, he realized he had to go through to understand, to be able to fix it, and stayed on, fortunately, and has been helping a tremendous amount of people. Okay. So let me just, in because we have this situation, we don't want to look at our brokenness, okay? I just want to, and this is the beginning of how we get into the healing of forgiveness, by acknowledging, you know, if I'm upset with someone else because they abused me, okay, they abused me when I was a kid, let's say, which is a huge, heavy thing for people. Right? And what we're doing is holding this person out there forever so they continue to harm me, even after they've died, even after I'm an adult, even after I've discussed it with them. But as long as it's in my mind there, they continue to do harm. Okay, if I haven't forgiven. And forgiveness takes time. It's a process. And sometimes you've forgiven. It's working pretty well. And you wake up the next morning and you realize you have to forgive again, the same person. So it's like that. Okay. What happens for us in our culture, we want things nicely packaged with a nice red bow on top, all nice and clean. And that's not how it works on planet Earth with samsara. So I think most of you are familiar with samsara, Sanskrit word to cycle, to turn. That's what it means, to turn. Korwa in Tibetan, samsara. You're turning through birth, old age, sickness, and death. All of it is suffering. I mentioned this before when I taught another Sunday morning. Samsara, situation suffering. It's not going to be in a neat package. And here's something. This is easy to let go of this one. You're never, are you ready for this? You are never going to have it all together. So let that one go. You will be so much happier. Right? We're strivers. We're doers. We're accomplishers. You come in Monday morning, if you work a 9-to-5 Monday through Friday job, people say, the weekend, what did you do? What did you do? What did you do this weekend? Yeah, I have to have your list of what you did. If you said, I did nothing, people go, oh, I love a weekend to do nothing. I would love that. Right? Give yourself some space. You're never going to have it all together. It's okay. And you know what? You're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. You're going to survive. You'll be happier knowing. So you can have lists. You can have your calendar and things like this. I've also learned recently, somebody was talking to me about time management skills. My sister's a consultant, so she works in coaching with people. And she said, instead of having lists, and put the thing, just put it on your calendar. So then that calendar day pops up. Put it on the calendar 2 weeks from now. Maybe you're not going to get to it that day. Just move it. But then you don't have this list. It's just you wake up, here's my calendar. I have things on my calendar. I look at it, I go, I'm not going to do that today. So I go in there, and I just move it to another day. Right? But then I don't have to deal with the lists. Right? So think about also these people that hold us hostage based on our holding something about them that we didn't like. They did this to me. They did this to my family. They did this to my kid. They harmed me. And people that have suffered from long-term child abuse who are adults, very, very heavy stuff. You can release yourself from it, but unfortunately, it's not a neat little package. It's going to take time. Some of it is very painful. Okay, let me just read this poem. Just close your eyes for a moment. Reflect on this poem from Archbishop Desmond Tutu. I will forgive you. The words are so small, but there is a universe hidden in them. When I forgive you, all those cords of resentment, pain, and sadness that had wrapped themselves around my heart will be gone. When I forgive you, you will no longer define me. You measured me and assessed me and decided that you could hurt me. I didn't count, but I will forgive you because I do count. I do matter. I am bigger than the image you have of me. I am stronger. I am more beautiful. And I am infinitely more precious than you thought me. I will forgive you. My forgiveness is not a gift that I am giving to you. When I forgive you, my forgiveness will be a gift that gives itself to me. So please relax, open your eyes. Forgiveness is beneficial to your health. It offers freedom from the past, from a perpetrator, from future victimization. It heals families and communities. We forgive so we don't suffer physically or mentally the corrosive effects of holding on to anger and resentment. We're all interconnected. We are all interdependent and have a shared humanity. So forgiveness is this gift you give yourself, okay? And we give ourselves in the shared humanity. So it's very positive when you think about it. It's just hard to do. It's hard to do. So Archbishop Desmond Tutu, and he has some beautiful things in this book, but he talks about, let me find the, a four-step process. And I just want to read one thing he mentioned. There's different ways to frame this. And some of you may not feel you have a lot to forgive. You know, maybe you need to be forgiven. Maybe you need somebody's forgiveness. But there's also, I don't know how many of you have long-term grudges that are held in families, family resentments. I know people that are like, I haven't talked to my brother in 5 years. We had a fight. And they don't even remember what the fight was about. So what happens usually for dying people is those things pop up. There's restlessness. You know, I've asked people, is there anybody else you want to talk to? You know, finally it comes out at the end when they're not that able to speak anymore. My brother. I needed to speak to my brother. You can also forgive people who have died in the past. Let me just read one thing. And Archbishop Desmond Tutu is talking a lot about living through apartheid, South Africa, okay? So there was a tremendous amount of torture that went on and killing of people, of black people by white people, let's say. So what Nelson Mandela decided to do, as most of you are familiar, instead of retaliation when apartheid ended, and white people I know in South Africa were extremely afraid that the same thing would happen to them of what they were doing to black South Africans. Nelson Mandela, a black leader, took charge and formed the Truth and Reconciliation Committees. So basically, part of it was telling your story. You got to tell your story of what happened to you, of the horrible torture, of how many people were killed in your family. And so to tell your story, experience the hurt, okay, forgive, and then you have a choice. This is the four-step process. The fourth step is either you have a choice to continue and renew a relationship with that person, to decide to have a relationship with them, the person who abused you or tortured you or harmed your family, or you could let the relationship go. So that's also possible, that there are people very toxic in your life, and you may realize, I think I can move through this. It was incredibly painful what happened. And you move through the process over time, take some time, depending on everyone's individual, okay? I'm going to do this work. And finally, forgive them. And you may have to forgive them again and again, but eventually it changes, it shifts. And you realize, I'm deciding not to have a relationship with them, not to have them in my life anymore. Or they passed away, letting them go like that. That's okay too. It's not that you have to continue the relationship. It doesn't work. But he talks about one of these people, another way to frame it, somebody who was horribly tortured and things, and the guy told him later, in the midst of his torture, he had an astonishing insight. These are God's children, and they are losing their humanity. We have to help them recover it. Can you imagine? But it's one way to think about it. Similar, this is similar to me as Lopan La, they call him, a Tibetan monk who was unable to escape Tibet with His Holiness the Dalai Lama. So about 150,000 Tibetans escaped in 59 with His Holiness the Dalai Lama to India. And a number of them stayed behind, were imprisoned and tortured and killed and like that. So he stayed behind, was 18 years in prison. He did finally get out to India. His Holiness spent time with His Holiness, and His Holiness asked him about, you know, what happened and to give him updates about people that they knew and what was the most difficult time in prison, things like this, very similar to this other man in South Africa. And he said, would you like to sit down? There's many seats. Please, feel free. Make yourself comfortable. Because what we're talking about is very uncomfortable. Might as well have the body be comfortable, right? Okay. And this, so this monk said to him, this older monk said, he said, there were two times I really thought I was in danger, like the most critical moments for me. Thinking, you know, we're thinking that he was going to be killed. And he said to His Holiness, there were two times I was in tremendous danger. You know, and His Holiness said, what? What happened? And he said, two times I nearly lost my compassion for the Chinese. Right? So that's the kind of mind we're trying to develop. And you can a little bit evaluate, like, where am I in relation to that? Where am I in relation to that? How can I get there? Because that's a peaceful mind with a fully expanded heart for all beings. That's the kind of place. And I'm not saying we're condoning torture. No. That you're condoning bad behavior doesn't mean you have to like it. You're not going to be comfortable in it. But this is about expanding our mind-heart experience. This is about that path to enlightenment where you, when I said about the Buddha qualities, you're free of all fear. Can you imagine? Wouldn't that be nice? No more fears. No more fears. I would love that. Because little things happen. You have many fears that block this space up. Block this space up. Fears about your kids. Fears about financial things. It could be about politics. It could be about your neighborhood. could be about the food you eat. I mean, there's so many things. Buddha, because you know everything. No more fear like that. So imagine that mindset. He was in danger because he was losing his compassion. So let me just go into a couple other little things I wanted to read related to forgiveness. And I'll talk a little bit more about wholehearted living as well. So these are some of the, I think, a little bit of misconceptions we have sometimes about forgiveness. It is not weakness. It is not injustice. It is not about forgetting. And it's not easy and it's not quick. Forgiveness. Okay. So I think some people feel like, and I've heard this, people consult with me, people that have been abused when they were a child. And so somebody in their family feels like, but if you forgive him, he was horrible to you. If you forgive him, you're weak. It's just the reverse. You're taking control and power back of your life to forgive somebody. Because people that don't forgive, they're holding it. Archbishop Desmond Tutu asks you to use a stone exercise. You get a stone that fits in the palm of your hand. Just imagine this. He asks you, find a stone. You can find a stone anywhere. And he asks you for 5 to 6 hours of a day, you have to hold the stone in one of your hands and do your activities. Becomes really annoying, this stone. Okay. This is what we haven't forgiven. It's like that. But it's a stone in here. And you're carting it around and it defines you and you express yourself from that. There's little resentments that fly up, agitations. You may be a miserable person. You may not be a miserable person, but you're in pain a lot, folded in on yourself, lack of confidence, distrusting yourself, right? Because you got this stone that you're carting around. So it's kind of helpful to, like, do it for 5 or 6 hours. And then he asks you to journal about it. What's the stone like? How did you feel? Did it interrupt anything? It's a little bit like that. Okay, let me add a little bit more here. Sorry, I've got different notes of the different courses here. This one course has all these different, okay. Bear with me for a moment. So part of an exercise in it starts with, in some ways, forgiving yourself. We're holding this thing, and you make it a lot about the other person. I need to be forgiven. I need to forgive them. But there's something we're holding about ourselves as well that's not releasing. Inability to forgive ourselves. And they kind of work together. If I'm unable to forgive someone else, I won't be able to forgive myself. If I can't forgive myself for some things, I won't be able to do it with others. So the beginning when I mentioned that we are all broken. If I just acknowledge the basic sense of samsara, you know, I mentioned this before in here. Some of you, is anybody new to me before, have never been to any classes I've done? Okay, so there's a number of people. If you are in, we mistake samsara and we think we're going to fix everything on planet Earth. And basically it often pertains to our lives. Like when we're going to get it all together. Then I'll be happy. Okay. But you know it's not true. Many of you own homes. You know what it's like with a home. You got the roof fixed. Now the washer broke. Oh, I still need to fix that panel that I didn't paint. It's endless. Our lives are like that. Now it's never going to be. So let that one go. And basically, can you stay present with what you're doing this moment, walking forward? And our practice is whoever's walking towards us at any moment. How's my mind? Okay, and what our minds are doing is boomeranging. Oh, I like this person. I don't like that person. This person's fat. This person's thin. That's my friend. I hate him. I watched it. You know, this is what our minds are doing. It's not peaceful at all. Just not peaceful. You know, no space to forgive in that thing. because I'm just holding it. It's got to be a certain way. Then we get into the situation where we label it, I'm overwhelmed. Now it's turned into language. I'm overwhelmed. I'm exhausted. I'm exhausted. We had a mantra at one of my retreat centers I worked at when this terminology was coming in. And it became, so you ruminate. Then you dig a big trench of that mantra in your mind. This was the mantra. I'm burnt out. I'm burnt out. It's contagious. Everybody else started to say it. So it's just words. They're words. If you're tired, sleep. Re-energize. And then you need to find what re-energizes you in the best way. What are your coping mechanisms? I'm just curious, anybody, what are your coping mechanisms when you're tired or you're a little flustered and imbalanced? What are your coping mechanisms?
Food,
TV, chocolate,
wine,
writing,
piano.
What's that? Go for a walk.
Art.
Okay. Nobody said meditation. Nobody said Dharma. Oh, he said, okay, thank you. Thank you, sir, in the back. Okay. So, but let's think about it. And thank you so much for being honest about these are our coping mechanisms. You go to the refrigerator. And then there's this, I mentioned yesterday, there's this mudra. We all know this mudra? And usually it's like, that makes me more tired. The TV, but please check. TV is easy. Right? They invented this box. I remember I'm really dating myself, you know, my dad fixed TVs at one point for a living. We had TVs all over the house in the 60s, all over the house. We had every kind of TV you could imagine. And then the TV, do you remember the TVs when they would roll? Come on, right? The picture would roll. You know, you guys younger, you'd never experience that. And we come and we go, Dad, it's rolling again. He'd come in the other room and then, bam, he'd hit the top because the capacitors were just loose. Something was, you know, hit the top and he'd go, what's the problem? You know, it's fine. Okay. So we had TVs. We also had TVs, if you remember. You had to get up and cross the room and change the channel. And there were only 3 or 4 channels. It was unbelievable, right? So the TV I find now it's too easy. Like this, you got the remote, right? I get too numbed out in front of TV. I don't like the space of my mind. It doesn't energize me at all. It saps my energy. Please check. So if that's your coping mechanism, find another coping mechanism. And what are you watching on TV? It's special, isn't it? What's on TV? It's really special in here. It goes in and most of the stuff in there, it's very scary. I find it very scary. So we go to the refrigerator, we go for physical exercise. Sometimes very good to get into your body. Exercise or go outside in nature because it lifts you out of, I'm burnt out, I'm burnt out, I'm burnt out. If you're really burnt out, sleep. Great recharge. Sometimes you just need to sleep. We don't sleep that well anymore often. Different disturbances because our minds are busy and because we also, before we sleep, we're looking at a little box, right? Or maybe this size box. And they say there's what? The blue light under it? So it interrupts your sleep. So please use your wisdom. Use your practical wisdom. You know, I can't say enough, but they say about turning devices off 2 hours before you go to sleep. Please check. Will you sleep better? I did an exercise myself because I read on my phone. I have books on my phone when I travel. So I heard about the blue light thing, and I was like, right? So I have to kind of turn it off. When I'm where I'm based with my father, I get library books out and read a book. But I like this. The reason I like this when I got books on my phone is it's connected to my library system. I can borrow library books for free on my phone. So I liked it. And the reason I liked it is I would often, reading makes me sleepy. So when I would fall asleep with the book, I've been hit many times in the face with a library book. With this, it just falls on the bed. Like that. But if that blue light, I have experimented because I think I do sleep better not having it in my face before I go to sleep or the TV on or things like that. Please experiment. So you want to be wise with yourself. So how are we forgiving ourselves? So part of in forgiving ourselves is recognizing the brokenness, the nature of samsara. If you're in a swimming pool filled with water, the nature of water is it's moist. So you don't flail around in the middle of the swimming pool filled with water saying, ah, it's wet here, right? But that's what we do with samsara all the time. You get pissed off because the car didn't start. I get irritated with my neighbor or my colleague at work because they left early and they didn't help me with this project, or they're rude, or they didn't get me a coffee when they went out. It goes on and on because I'm not communicating well with my partner, with my spouse. This is samsara because your kid gets sick. It's endless. It's endless because somebody got elected to this office that you didn't want or that you did like, but you don't like this policy or that. It doesn't matter. It's samsara. I mentioned this before in, we found this really funny in Buddhist communities. So some of you might remember years ago, 20 years ago, a cosmetic company made a new perfume and they called it samsara. Okay, the Buddhists thought that was hysterical. Like, we need more of this? We need to buy this now? Some cosmetic company came up with a sexy word, samsara. I don't know if they knew what it meant, right? And so they had commercials on TV. I remember we saw a commercial on TV. We didn't have TV at the center, but somebody, and it was a commercial, and it was like, samsara. Like, it was a sexy, I gotta have some of that, you know. What is that, you know? So please be cautious with yourself, and this is samsara's nature. We're flawed. We're all flawed, okay? Again, I'm okay. I feel good about myself in a balanced way, okay? But because I acknowledge that I'm flawed, I acknowledge that I make mistakes. I'm a human being, and that's part of the human condition, that I make mistakes. I accept that about myself. It doesn't mean I intend to make mistakes. It doesn't mean that I purposely do them. Okay, but when I make a mistake, meaning I said an offhand thing to somebody that was rude, right? I didn't finish the project. I drove haphazardly and gave somebody the finger, right? No one in here does that, right? Okay, that's what I thought, right? But, you know, things happen. And you lose the balance of your mind. This starts to constrict, right, based on delusion. And delusion is anger, confusion, pride, jealousy, fear, anxiety, depression, anything like that, we all experience them. We're trying to clear them out to become a Buddha that's completely open and spacious here. And all that manifests here is infinite wisdom, compassion, and loving kindness. But otherwise, we have boxes and constraints, and the delusions obscure the clear, open spaciousness, make my mind out of balance. So you're going along, and then one of the delusions arises in my mind, and then my mouth opens from there, and I react negatively. Okay, so that creates another habit of that. But if I'm a practitioner, and I'm just trying to be wise and look at it, right, I'll notice first the delusion arising in my mind. So I'm good now. Instead of getting to full-blown anger, right, I catch my anger at irritation, frustration, and annoyance. Because they're all experiences of anger, they're just not full-blown into the anger, rage, hatred area. So I'll notice irritation. I might be driving. I'm not a real irritated driver. That doesn't really bother me. But I'll notice something. You know, and I'll just notice it bubbling up, and I'll be like, okay. And then I'll see if it's a little bit stronger. I have a little internal mechanism. Talk to your delusion. I'll be like, okay, Amy, do not open your mouth now. You know, because I know where you're going with this. You know, make sure it does not come out your mouth. Like, the thought's still there. I acknowledge the thought. I could say, years ago, I'd say I'm not happy with the thought. I shouldn't have thoughts like that. Hey, the thought's there. Came. I'm working on it. So I just accept it. There I am. And you know what? That really helps me reach across and connect to somebody else when I see behavior that they do with their body, or their speech, I don't know their mind, but it seems to arise from a thought like that. So this stays open. I can have more compassion for them. Then able to forgive more. Because I'm not that different than them. That's where those activities come from those thoughts. They just come from those thoughts. Where do the thoughts come from? Seeds that are planted in my mind, in my consciousness. Where does it come from? Previous moments of that in my mind. That's all. That's all. I'm a human being. I'm trying my best. If you're trying your best, you don't have much to worry about because that's all you can do. So in my acknowledgement of my own limited situation, that I make mistakes, and when I make a mistake, right, I may lay there for a moment on the ground, face down, I'm just metaphorically, and just be like, this hurts, this sucks, right? And then I pick myself up, eyes open, right? And then you try to learn from what happened. Why? I don't want to repeat it again. I'd like not to repeat it again. So then from here, I move forward. I move forward. I make another mistake. So for me, I've got two steps forward, sometimes one step back. Two steps forward, one step back. But I keep continuing to make progress. And that's the best I can do sometimes. But again, because I'm flawed, recognize my brokenness, right? I'm much better able to kind of have some empathy, some heart sharing of our shared humanity again. We're all broken. We're all broken. So you make a mistake, I can be much better able to forgive, much more quickly, because I've done the same thing, or I've been in the same space. You know, yep, I've said the same stupid thing that you just said. I may not say that to the person, but it's in my mind. I understand. Okay? So better able to forgive. Makes sense? So continue, and I would say something we're talking about in the other class I'm doing here this weekend, we've got a little bit more this afternoon to go, is continue as much as you can right now. What the planet seems to need is connection, positive connection. Please find a way. There's times you want to fold up. You don't want to look at the news. You don't want to hear this person speak on TV, or you don't want to hear that person speak on TV. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter who you voted for. You've got different things. The little walls are going up here. So just notice it, acknowledge and observe. Yeah, I'm feeling a little adverse to this person, not happy with this person. So just breathe through it. Basic mindfulness practice is take a deep breath. Take a second deep breath or a third one and acknowledge, I'm uncomfortable right now. That's samsara. I'm sorry. That's samsara. This is our situation. You can get free of samsara. Please know that. You can be free of samsara. That's what's exciting about this path. Or if you find it on another path, follow that. You can bring about a permanent cessation of all your mental afflictions. Can you imagine? You can do that. That's what we call nirvana, liberation. Nirvana, Sanskrit word. That's not enlightenment. But it's high on the path to enlightenment. So I acknowledge sometimes, I'm not happy with what I'm seeing out there, right? And I'll go, okay, well, I understand samsara's nature, okay? Once I start understanding that, it starts to diffuse the anger, frustration, fear, depression, whatever's arising. Oh, right, that's right. This is the given. This is how it is because I came back with a mind of delusion. Now, there's a lot of good things about you, too. I'm not saying it's just delusion. So please celebrate. Like I said, when I first wake up, I have gratitude for the good situation in my life that I created and my good qualities in a balanced way. So I appreciate myself every day in a balanced way, not egomaniacal way. In a balanced way, I appreciate my goodness. I believe I'm fundamentally good, and I believe that of every being on the planet. Because you have Buddha nature. It's a seed or a potential that everyone with a mind has that can awaken into a fully realized being. Buddha nature. It doesn't mean you're a Buddha yet. It means you have a potential. And every being, I believe, on the planet with a mind has that. So as soon as I see something I don't like, experience a person I have a different view from, they have Buddha nature. You know, and like me, they make mistakes. You know, or I'm watching something I don't agree with. So I wonder if they're if there's suffering, if it comes from a confused place, I have the same confusion. Many times I'm confused. I don't have all the information. And they'd say in this path, until you've had a direct perception of emptiness, the nature of reality, your story is always wrong. Your story is always wrong. Your story has a valid perspective from your limited view. But it's never the whole story. It's never a fully accurate story until you've had a direct perception of emptiness. I found that so freeing. You get stories going about people, right? So please analyze your story. It has a valid perspective from your view, but it's not the whole story. And you've seen that sometimes. You get a thing going about somebody, you see them do something, you didn't understand the whole thing, the see thing, and you start a whole thing. They're horrible, they're miserable, they did this, they did that, right? And somebody else comes up and then tells you what they saw, and it's totally different. Or they have some more information, like that. So in part of our thing of forgiveness is about how much you can accept yourself in the brokenness. It's a hard passage. And what of our fears and our suffering and our pain are we not looking at? Now, you can't look at it all at once. Most people can't. So you want to slowly take pieces of it. Take pieces of it. I was wronged. They fired me. They did this. They cheated me. He left me. There's pieces. You want to slowly, time heals, and you want to slowly go in when you're ready. You know, so using the Lam Rim as a base, using our philosophy as a base, Buddhist practice, if it's tremendous trauma you've gone through, it's also helpful maybe to have a counselor on the side, a professional counselor on the side to support. I would love to have a meditation practice as a third component. I found people really make tremendous progress with that. I mean, I do that in my own life, but I'm just saying those three components seem to really help people move through the pain, the fear, the suffering like that, if you're holding on to something like that. And it can be little things. Little resentments build up in relationships over time. You know, so you don't have to harbor and hold that resentment all this time. It's like analyze what's under it. You need to peel back the layers. Like that. Okay, so a little bit more. I want to... Oh, this is going very quickly. Goodness. Sorry, hang on one second. Here we go. So from Archbishop Desmond Tutu, we're not created to live in suffering and isolation. You don't have to stay in that pain, even if you're broken. That's not about staying forever in suffering and isolation. We're created to live in love and connection with one another. When there's a break in the connection, we have to have a method to repair it. You have to have a method. The break happens constantly because it's samsara. Okay, so again, I really believe this. We're created to live in love and connection with one another. This is from somebody Christian. It's the same thing Jesus was talking about. It's the same thing the Buddha's talking about. It's all about love and connection. And most of the esoteric sides of most religions I've studied, they're all saying the same thing. It's about love and connection. It was really sweet. I taught last weekend in New York, and we have a wonderful group up there as well. And the... we were talking about you have to do your internal work, I was saying, and then you have to do your external work. So, you know, we're people that live in the world. But what I found is, having been involved in politics for many years, if you're just doing external work without having it informed from a basis, a balanced place of good internal work, it was very futile. Really wasn't helpful. and it got me very frustrated and angry and polarized, things like that of, you know, we're better than you, and this is the bright side, and this is the bad side, and like that. So one woman, we were talking about the internal work of meditation practice, study, analyzing your pain, understanding when you make a mistake, what happened, when there's a problem, a conflict between two people, can you sit down calmly and discuss it? Are you actively listening to people? That's part of communication. It's not just that you're expressing clearly. How are you listening to people, especially those closest to you? We said yesterday, how do you listen to your spouse? How many of you are married? How long are you married?
30 years.
30 years? Who else? How long are you married for? Different people.
2 years, but 5 years.
Okay, so 7 years. 38 years, right? 39? Great. Almost 40 years. So when your most delicious partner, wonderful being, speaks to you, what do you hear? This is a partner also you think is always going to be there, always going to be on the other side of the bed. You know, they're always there. So we take them for granted a little bit, don't we? That they're always going to be there. I do know people, there was a fight in the morning, person left for work and died. That happens. That person is always going to be there for you. One woman where I would teach in England, her husband, she, great relationship, 4 kids, and he went out to work, went down to the bakery where he always gets his coffee and thing, and had a heart attack and died right in the bakery, right down the street in their house. The shock, right? This happens. I'm not wishing this on anyone, okay? How do you hear your precious loved one? Really well? Mike, really well?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right? Isn't this what happens sometimes? We did this yesterday, right? Some of your... They're speaking. This is what we're hearing. Right? So then later they say, but I told you. And you say, no, you didn't. Yes, I did. No, you didn't. Yes, I did. And then you start fighting. So please listen to them. You signed up. You made a contract with this being to be together. The love, love and connection was what it was all about in the thing. And I just disconnected. I'm tired of hearing, right? Right, I found it so amazing. My father, some years ago, got a hearing aid, even though he didn't need it. He didn't need it when my mom was alive. Okay, got a hearing aid, and it was hysterical. I didn't go. They went to this hearing person, whatever, they do the test. And then the hearing person, who was a female, said, oh, actually what happens, there's a decibel. The decibels that men lose first in their hearing are the decibels, the range of the female's voice. Is that samsara or what? You know, I'm like, my mother told me, and I went, what? Like, you know, the first thing they tune out is the wife's voice, because they really can't hear it. They literally cannot hear it. Those are the first. I'm like, what kind of, you know, horrible world system is this that we got born into? That, you know, so interesting. But it's funny. It's really funny. So please, this is your most precious person. Can you ever stop multitasking and offer listening to them? It's a great offering to make to somebody. I'm just going to listen to you. I think it's important when you say, I want to make sure I hear it all. So maybe you repeat something back to them. That's communication. And you don't have to do it all the time, but you can start a little exercise. Do it some of the time. It's a great offering. You may notice some little resentments in the relationship, some improvement in certain areas of the relationship. Just something you can try. So this is about, so this woman was talking, we were talking about the internal external practice. So I find that internal practice is so valuable to inform. And then we said externally, people were upset in New York, whatever the election, you know, New York's a very progressive area, they wanted something else. So I said, well, you have your options. You want to call representatives? Call them. You want to write letters? You want to go to a protest? One woman said, I go to a protest. And I said, great. How do you go? What's your attitude? And she said, love and connection. That's how you go to a protest. You want to go because you're angry at somebody? Don't go to the protest in anger. Don't get angry with people there. We don't need that in the world. We have enough of that, right? Love. I said she could teach a course, love and connection. So this is really what we're about, because I believe, and this is a Buddhist teaching, we are fundamentally good. Premise of Buddhism, we are fundamentally good. And it's radical from some of the other religious teachings we may have got, but we're fundamentally good. I would start with that, and I believe that about everybody. So I really feel like we're going to be okay, and that I do believe, I do have hope in, because of the fundamental goodness of everybody. Okay. So then Archbishop Desmond Tutu, and then I'll take some questions, offers this method. He calls it the fourfold path with forgiveness. The fourfold path, I mentioned it a bit before. The first path in forgiveness, telling the story. Telling the story. Something happened. You need to talk about it. You can talk about it in therapy. You can talk about it with your partner. If it's something related to them, talk about it. Tell the story. Tell your friends. Tell people you trust and are comfortable with to tell the story. This was part of the truth and reconciliation process. People got to tell their stories. If you don't get to tell the story, it festers. So tell it. Tell it in a somewhat balanced way. You may break down and cry. That's okay. Nothing wrong with that. Number two, naming the hurt. Naming the hurt. How did it make you feel then? How does it make you feel now? Do you want to put it into a word? I feel tremendously paranoid and fearful and completely traumatized that this happened to me, or I'm just really disappointed. I feel disappointed in you, and I don't know if I can trust you anymore, or I'm confused that I don't know why I got fired. You know, I thought I was doing a good job. I'm not really, I don't trust people anymore there. I'm kind of confused about the whole premise of this business. Name the hurt. How is it feeling? Other words you might have, many other words. Number three is granting forgiveness. Once the story's been told, you know, if the person has already passed away, you can visualize them in front of you and say what you need to say. It does change the energy. Say what you need to say. If you can say it in a more balanced way, if you can say it in, you know, a very straightforward way, or if you're twisted in pain and anger, say what you need to say. Name the hurt. I've done this in visualizations with people that weren't around and stuff like that to release it, and then allow the forgiveness. Grant the forgiveness. Grant the forgiveness. Again, you're giving yourself a gift. You're releasing the stone from your heart by granting the forgiveness. It won't be familiar or easy at first if you're not familiar with forgiving. You'll be like, I can't do this. You know, but watch how much the person defines you and holds you hostage your whole life. So you try, and you wake up the next morning, you feel like you did it. You wake up the next morning and go, I have to do a little bit more. Then you do more. Eventually it will go. If you're very intent, eventually it will go. The fourth step, renewing or releasing the relationship. So that's your choice again. I want to continue to have a relationship with this person. That's valuable to me. I want that. Make it known. You can tell them, okay, I am going to move forward with you. I do want to do this. Or there's some people, you don't have to do that anymore. And you can say that there isn't, you know, it's not going to work. You forgive them, you let them go, like that. So we often have with pain, we have two paths when the pain arises, when we're in pain. You can choose to harm, or you can choose to heal. You can choose to harm, or you can choose to heal. Choosing to heal, obviously, is going to get you a much more beneficial outcome. Happier mind, peaceful heart. That's just a little blip right now. I know it's a very short time. Are there any questions, comments? Is that helpful? Helpful? Just something to think about. Yes, please. Wait, they're bringing you a microphone, I think.
Thank you. I agree with what you say, not because you say it as you said it, but because it makes sense to me. But I am assuming that this forgiveness that you're talking about must come from the heart. Because if it doesn't come from the heart, what's the sense of forgiving? Well, that's my problem. And the problem is that I want to forgive. For example, all those people who kill animals wanting to, all those people who completely decimate all the trees around my house just only for profit, Trump, who does all these horrible things, they're permanent, they're there. So my mind says, Brenda, you should not hate. You should forgive. That's what my brain says. Hence the reason I'm here. But my heart is hating and is hurting. And I can't get over that. I want to. This is the reason I'm here, because I realize I'm broken, as you said.
Right.
But I don't see how, when I am looking at these people, killing all these animals and killing all these trees, and Trump doing all these things that he is doing with the environment, with people, with everybody. It's not a matter of me, meaning having a relationship with somebody who hurt me. It's me having a problem with the injustice that I'm seeing out of me.
So then you have to look at the options again. And I would just say, overall, practice dharma. What I mean by that is, okay, this is samsara's nature. Samsara's nature is there's all kinds of problems. That's how it manifests. Okay? And for me, without a direct perception of emptiness, I've come back with what's called contaminated aggregates. And that causes me to suffer and have delusion in my mind. Delusion in my mind makes a distorted reality. Everything comes from the mind in Buddhism. And I know that's a bit radical. That's what Tibetan Buddhism says. Everything comes from the mind. If I can dismantle the causes of delusion in my mind, my external reality will shift for the better. His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, highly realized beings, they don't have to be Buddhist, okay? If they happen to be manifesting on planet Earth, they see what goes on. The distortion, and they see the glory, because there's both. There's some beautiful things about planet Earth, and there's some messed up things about planet Earth. You could say it's a person, you could say it's an environment, whatever it is. They see that, but they also see it in a totally different reality, an ultimate nature, lacking any inherent, concrete, independent existence. You said a word that these things are permanent. Well, they're not permanent. They're changing all the time. We just had 8 years of a different president, very different agenda. And this is going to swing back. It swings one way and it swings another. So, you know, people think it's a big shock, but did we forget about the 12 years of Reagan-Bush? Did we forget about Nixon? Like how, really? We have amnesia over that? Young people are very disturbed because they don't remember that. But we live through that if you're around my age. This is samsara's nature. It's not permanent at all. It goes from one thing to the next, to the next. And then the other level would be if I can go back and do some emptiness meditation, if I study emptiness a little bit, start some intro courses on emptiness, read some beginning books about the nature of reality, emptiness, right? You start to understand what is the source of your fundamental confusion, which makes me broken. And I realize that all beings that are human, not enlightened, all beings that are human suffer from that fundamental confusion. How can I not have compassion for them? That's what grows my compassion. So they cut down all the trees. It's sad. Okay? I'm going to tell my story. They cut down all the trees. They're cutting down all the trees. It looks like they continue to do it. Right? I'm going to name the hurt. I'm so sad over it. I'm totally depressed about it. Okay? I can continue to hold it and be angry at them, and the heart hardens. I don't really want that. I forgive them because, my gosh, they don't really know what they're doing. They don't know about the destruction that they're doing. That. So I can choose to forgive. And what if I create a healthy relationship with them, renewing the relationship? What if we had loggers next to our center of Vajrapani in California in the Redwoods? We had a logging company. They destroyed the road continually. We couldn't prove it. I had to be out there with my camera when they rolled over the road. They had a lot of money. We didn't. We had to pay for the road. They wouldn't take any responsibility, and they did horrible things with the way they took the trees out and the way they cut the trees down. So my first couple of years, I was just angry at them all the time. Then I came out on the road, and I thought, well, this isn't working, because I alienate them, then I lose the connection, then more problems. Because then they started to see me, and then they start hating me back. Finally, I came out on the road, and I started talking to the guys. They're nice guys. I actually really like them, really nice people. I started getting to know them, finding out about their families, about this, about that. Well, then they start working with me. We're going to fix that. We know we did the thing on the road. We're going to fix that. I invited them down to the center. Friends. Friends help each other. That's what we have to do. That's our job.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I mean, that's just my trajectory, but... But so please, I mean, all I can say is we do get freaked out and we get angry and then we divide. And that's not the solution. So every time it comes up for me, and it does come up, I think like, okay, how can I soften this in my heart and how can I continue to positively reach out to somebody? I like actually hearing, having been involved in politics, I like to hear what the other side has to say, the side I'm maybe not supporting. I want to hear because it teaches me something. I've learned a lot about it, and it helps me form relationships with these people because when I have a relationship with them, they're more apt to listen to me as well when I express something. But, you know, you've got to keep dialoguing positively. I think it's our only solution is to keep connecting positively. And I hope we can do that. Other questions? I hope that's helpful.
Yeah.
Just try your best. Mike's going to tell me about his relationship. I'm joking.
I hope you have every many weeks to listen. Yeah. If forgiveness is to be full and complete and truly an open heart and meaningful, isn't part of it recognizing that the person will do the same thing? Again and again, maybe, and that forgiveness means I'm forgiving you and you're not going to do that again, are you? And you can't put that condition on it or it isn't forgiveness. Is that correct? Or
that's not our problem. You can't control what they're going to do or do again. It's about releasing you. You hope they don't do it again. And obviously, if there's a lawlessness issue, and you certainly speak up, because social activism, in the face of social injustice, as a bodhisattva on this path, you have a responsibility to speak up, to act. But what's your motivation? It's got to be compassionate wisdom. I'm not going to do it out of anger, but I'm going to basically say, yes, I saw this guy abusing children and such as. Then you tell whoever, you act on that kind of stuff. And you have to act and weigh it. Sometimes you're forced quickly to act on something. You know, dead animal on the road. Is it alive? It's your choice to stop or not stop. Do you want to pull it off the road? Do you want to see if it's alive? Do you want to try to get... You have a quick decision as you're driving. That's a quick one. I was in New York City many years ago, before the Dharma, Upper West Side of Manhattan, late at night with a friend going home, and there were two white police, it looked like to me, with somebody of color on the hood of the car, and we didn't know what was happening. I didn't know. I couldn't really see whether, you know, I didn't have any judgments about the police or what. And the police in New York are actually pretty cool, a lot of them. They handle a lot of heavy stuff. And so we were there, and my friend, and then the other thing is, think of yourself what you would do. Don't put it on somebody else. Did you ever get shit on, you know? Like, so there's my friend, you know, we should do something. We should do some. Think on your own what you want to do. I don't know what to do. I'm, you know, like, we're in the, you know, we should do something. She grabs me. We should do something. You know, I'm like, what do you want to do? I'm here too. I don't know. I just walked up. So quickly you're evaluating. Many times you're quickly evaluating. Can I do something? Sometimes you can't do anything. Then you have to leave it go. You have to practice, I can't do anything here. Samsara's nature, you can't fix everything. But I quickly looked and I assessed myself. I went, I don't want to run across the street. I didn't feel safe. They have guns. I don't know. I don't feel safe running across the street at night, late at night. And, you know, so I just looked. And so I just stood there and I decided to cough really loudly. That's all I could think of to do. I just really loud. Now, there's two people here, me and her, cough really loudly. They all looked up over at us. Now, there's two people, witnesses. They looked up, they saw us, and they put the person in the car and they drove away. I don't know what happened, but I just felt like that's all I could do. So you act. You just do what you can do. Face of social injustice. Like I said, you want to go to a protest, write a letter, call congresspeople, give money to an organization, volunteer. But I find it's really helpful to practice Dharma because that's your internal work that informs, that layers it into a compassionate, gentle space that you're going to do it from. And people listen to you more when you're coming from that space generally.
This is my first time here.
Welcome.
Thank you. Actually, a week ago, I was at the Buddha Center in Chicago because my parents had gotten into a horrible car accident, and my mom has been in a coma
since that happened right
before Thanksgiving.
Oh.
And my dad is out of the hospital, but, you know, working on things, and he has a lot of pain because he was physically has pain, but yes, physically, mentally has pain because he was driving. And and I have, I guess, I'm having a hard time forgiving myself for not being able to be there all the time because I'm an only child. I feel like I'm not doing anything very well right now. And while I was in Chicago, my transgender daughter had a really bad time to the point that I had to come back and we had to have the police help get her back. And now she's in the hospital. And I'm praying so hard for both of them. And I'm not very forgiving of myself. I feel like I let her down. I feel like I didn't get to talk to my mom before Thanksgiving, and so I'm trying to find, like, peace and forgiveness for myself because I feel like, I don't know.
So you can only try your best. My teacher says that all the time. You can only try your best. And I'm so sorry about all that's going on. Is, I mean, partly you can't help that you're an only child. That was their choice. You have a life and a vocation and things, and many people on this planet move away from family to get work, to do work. There's nothing wrong with that. So you show up when you can. You've got a daughter that's obviously needs some support, and you try to support her as best as you can. That's important too. So make sure part of it is also part of our compassion thing was to do some self-care last night, looking at self-care. Part of the self-care is understanding that I'm limited, you know. So you just have to do your best and be there and show up when you can and slowly, little by little, make decisions that have to be made, important decisions, whether your parents need to move, whether you decide you need to temporarily move or take a leave of absence to be there more. It may not change anything for them. My mom was 7 months hospitalized, unresponsive, before, you know, so it was, and I was an 8-hour drive away with a fully heavy job doing that. So I spoke to Lama Zobo Rinpoche about it at the time. And he said, is your mother in the hospital, in a rehab? So she's got care. And he said to me, does she have care? And I said, yes, she does. And he said, somebody's taking care of her. Like, it's not like she's alone in a home where... So he said, you go down as much as you can go. He goes, you go there when you can because she's got care. You know, and I made sure the care was okay. It was like that. And then, and my father needed care as well because, you know, the whole thing was just a mess like that. So you do what you can do like that. And just notice when you're not forgiving yourself, it's just closing you up and preventing you from supporting what you have to support. It's a big time of life for you. Some people are handed all of a sudden a big dish as opposed to the little dish, right? And so it's okay. So it's a big plate. It's a big heaping, you know, mess of a plate right now. And so the lack of forgiveness isn't going to help them. It's not going to get her out of the hospital any sooner, out of the rehab. It's like you're, and so I would just notice it come up like a bubble. You can pop some of those bubbles. Just another thought. I'm giving that thought a lot more weight right now that I'm not good. Not a good daughter. I'm not, you know, and maybe you evaluate, should I be doing something more? I would even get the should out, but can I do any more than I can right now? I had to evaluate when I was doing this other job, and at one point I went, you know what? No, I can't do any more. I'm going down as often as I can, every 2 weeks, and I every 2 weeks, there I was, 10 hours in a hospital room with somebody that didn't even know I was in the room, maybe. So trying to do, and I was doing pujas there with her in the room, but it's like, okay, so I would do that, and then I'd go back to the job. So that's the best I could do. And it was all okay, actually. It was all okay. What's her name? I can say prayers. You. Okay. I hope that's helpful. So, yeah, slowly. I think you're doing the best you can do. So, anything else? Any other questions? So one more. Yep, and then we'll take a break. Oh, yep.
Hey, how you doing? It's my first time here too, and I was gonna ask. For the more heavy-duty resentments, like with romantic betrayal and so forth, like carried on into, you know, acting from that trauma, I was wondering if you could comment on that process of forgiveness.
So it would be the same process, you know, telling the story of this happened. What I do find, and because you're new to Buddhism, it's hard to get the sense of karma. Karma is a law of cause and effect. And what it means is every activity I do with my body, speech, and mind leaves an imprint in my mind. And that imprint will ripen in the future unless it's purified first or destroyed first. So when you're betrayed in a romantic relationship, Buddhism says we've created the cause for that to happen, this life or past lives. I'm not blaming myself, I'm just taking ownership and saying, okay, that's where it comes from. I don't want this to happen again, because it's a nightmare. So I want to be very careful, and all I can do is the relationships I have from this point forward is to be very honest, forthright, kind, compassionate, loving, as much as I can do, honest in those relationships to create healthy relationships. I would analyze what was my role in the relationship if it happened. If I feel like there's nothing I can really concretely say I did, we would just say it's from past seeds that were planted, from the karma, like that. And then also acknowledging that this person's operating from a confused place, if it appears that they betrayed us, working slowly to generate some compassion for them, that they're going to create some negativity for themselves from that exercise, like that. And then the other thing is you don't want to be with someone that doesn't want to be with you. So initially there's a zest in love. It's wonderful. It's exciting. And it's finished and it's changed and things change for people. And people make a lot of mistakes in relationship. We have tremendous attachment in relationship. It's hard to have relationship without attachment. So understanding all those different functions of how it works and things change, people move on, want to do something else. So may I determine in my mind to find somebody that I can have a healthy, loving relationship with in the future. And not to jump into relationship. Also, I had a lot of relationships before I was a nun. What kind of holes in me was I trying to fill? When I entered a relationship like that, it didn't go well. If I kind of came in with my brokenness, this is who I am, I'm going to be honest. I'm trying to be a good person. I'm a good person. And just presented like that, as whole as I could be, then I attracted people like that. Does that make sense? Is that... Sorry, I don't have a blue pill that you can take and then it all goes away. I wish I did for all these situations. A lot of times in the States, people want it like, I just want to take the pill. Can you give me the pill and everything will be fine? This isn't the path for that. If you want that, please find another path. It's not this path. But this path is genuine, authentic, it works, I have no doubt, but it does take some effort. So I hope you can come back. I hope you can both come back, because I do know there's really sources of happiness here with my own experience. Maybe just quick question, something quick. There's two more people that, because we're out of time.
Okay, yeah. When you talk about brokenness, perhaps it's just like a matter of the wording, but I think I would have to disagree that people are inherently broken, because I think that's just a matter of expectations that you're having. Like, if you're looking at yourself or at somebody else and you see something broken, it's just because you have some sort of expectation there that's not being met. And I think it's like a matter of, like, you're labeling it as something, but I think it's just it's something that you're not accepting. Like, you'd be looking at it and you have this expectation and you're saying it's broken because it's not met, but it's actually just that you're not accepting it the way that it is.
Well, I wouldn't say they're inherently broken, because we don't have that notion of inherent existence in Buddhism. Nothing exists concretely, independently from its own side. So I wouldn't say anything's inherently broken. Ultimately, there's no brokenness at all. What I mean by the brokenness is, I notice just for myself, I have limitations in my mind. I don't know your minds. Because I'm not clairvoyant, I do know people that are clairvoyant. Because I'm not, if you come and need help, I'm limited in what I can advise you. I may not know exactly the best thing for you. As a highly realized being, I would know, right, as I'm moving out of my brokenness. But because sometimes I suffer from irritation, forgetfulness, sadness, I have imbalances in the mind, or, you know, that's what I kind of mean about the brokenness, is just accepting delusion that I understand it. I'm not having an expectation. What does happen is, we have an expectation that things should be perfect or should all fit in and everything's going to get done. It's not realistic. So I think by accepting the nature of samsara, that it's flawed, then I can work from there. And I feel like I'm being much more honest with myself. I don't know if that makes sense.
I think it's just like, when you're saying that it's flawed, I think that's the part that I disagree with, because that's just like...
So great. No, you're doing great, yeah.
Okay, by saying that it's flawed, then you're saying that you have a different expectation of it and that it should be something else, but then that
well, I guess
itself would be...
I see what you're saying, but it's not... I guess I just look at... if you have fear arise, or anger, or attachment, or jealousy, or if you're ever in pain, small pain, psychic pain, emotional pain, physical pain, that's a problem for me. I might, and you can say it's a terminology, it's true, I label it a problem. I would like it to go away. When I see others in pain, like, my heart kind of reaches out of like, oh, I wish there was something I can do. So for me, that's a given on planet Earth. And I feel like, are we left with the problems and the suffering? And Buddhism says no. You can bring about an end to the problems and suffering permanently. So I'm interested in that. But I think part of that is acknowledging that part of the human existence is the problems and suffering are there. If I don't say they're there, then what's your option to say that we're perfect now? Or what would be your premise, basically?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think it would just be like more a matter of acceptance and I don't know, just recognizing that those things are there. But yeah, I think by labeling it a problem or a flaw or like something being broken, then that's creating more problems with it.
Yeah, no, I see what you mean. It's a good point what you mean. And I think we're meeting on that, you know, realizing that the problems are there, not making it overly heavy by then further defining it and labeling it. But what's interesting for me, and it's a good point you make, is the first teaching the Buddha gave was the first of the Four Noble Truths. There is suffering, right? I was dismayed. I was a new Buddhist. I was like, what? I want to hear about love. and freedom. Suffering, what? I'm not interested in that at all. But there's a significance why he taught that, was in order to get to love and freedom, you have to transcend through first your suffering to then really understand somebody else's suffering, to want to relieve it. And so then it had much more meaning once I really explored that, of realizing. So you're right, it can be made a little bit heavier with the terminology, but I do realize there is some level that I have to accept on the planet like that. There's one more. You had to give a quick, yeah. Hello. Hi. Are you happy? Yeah, okay. Right on. If we could find that innocence of some of the children's minds where, you know, and also I love, it's great what you said about terminology, the way kids create new terms, right? Haven't some of your kids made up new words that are, you know, one of my friends, I think, when they would see a motorcycle on the road, on the freeway, motorcycle driver, they called them riders. I just like stuff like that. I think The World According to Garp used with his kids, it was an old book, you know, years ago, but the kids had the word, you have the word in the ocean, undertow. And the kids thought it was undertowed, that there was a toad under there that would pull you into the ocean. You know, it's great when kids come up with these, like, creative, like, you're like, oh, yeah, the undertowed is coming to get us. You know, like, I still think about that when I go to the ocean and they're like, there's a really bad undertow today. And I'm like, the amphibian is there waiting to suck me in, you know. It's kind of cool. Oh, she's gone. Okay. So why don't we dedicate, she had to take her child. Let's dedicate. I want to thank you so much for coming. We continue around 1:30. 1:30, maybe 1:40. Till 4, we have the retinue. You're welcome to join. I'd like to thank you. And I'd like to dedicate, if anything was positive that we've done this morning, can you fold it into your practice, or may it help you develop a practice that is going to benefit your heart and mind and help you get to a place where you're completely free of all suffering? And can you then reach out to help and lead others to that place as well? Thank you so much for coming. I'm also, a couple last things I was going to mention. If you're interested, I have some cards here if it's helpful. It's connected to a YouTube channel where there are some teachings, as Kadampa Center also has on their website, but there's some teachings I've done you can listen to. I'm also, if you want to attend any retreats I'm leading, the schedule is on the website. There's a retreat in New York in April, a week-long one in California in April, and there's something overseas if you're interested to take a holiday like that. And then I'm leading a pilgrimage to Nepal in October 2018. So if you're interested in visiting this remote retreat center. But thank you so much for coming. And this is a fantastic center I want to mention, Kadampa Center. You have a treasure here. This is one of the most successful centers we have in the FPMT, our organization. Two Geshe's. Geshe Gelick is a great scholar. Amazing. You have some amazing people. I want to thank Donna and Jill and Venerable Khandro. I mean, these people that make it happen. And I also want to say, having run two retreat centers and managed two other centers in our organization for years, is these centers don't happen on their own. They don't. It looks like they do. Looks like it's easy, but they don't. So you could have like 3 hours a month. You want to volunteer? I mean, they have specific things very easily you could do that you kind of give back, and it's just a wonderful way to help. So I just wanted to mention it's a great way that makes you feel good and you benefit. I mean, the fact that you showed up today and you're new, some people might say they're new, is because people had an idea to get together to make this center because they found it helped their minds. So now the center's here. So then you have a place to come. But they don't just happen on their own. So I just wanted to say, please think about that for the future if you're ever interested, because it's only all of us that make it go round. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Enjoy your...